All right, folks, welcome back to the latest Mountain West Wire football podcast. MWR.com is where you can find Matt expansion news this week. Since we're not working this timely, but not timely, all of our previews, early looks, news type stuff. Football season, fall camp is happening around the country, Matt. And we got stuff to help you out, keep updated. So that's what we do here at MWR.com. And talk about team previews. We're doing the Hawaii Warriors today, which is awesome.
Always a very interesting team to talk about, aren't they?
They always are. They're on the islands. They play late night football that people definitely should stay up and watch on the whatever app they're on this year. I assume the Team One Sports app, right?
Is that I haven't heard anything to the contrary. So I would assume that for those of us on the mainland, you're going to want to make sure that you have Team One Sports downloaded on your Apple or
whatever device.
Android device, because you unless you get like a VPN or something like that and you're more tech savvy than I am, that's going to be the way you watch it, as you know, bathed in the warm glow of your cell phone at 10 11 midnight. But who cares?
Could
Right,
be...
that's the role that they occupy. That's, you know, that's what makes college football so great.
Can it be, yes, can it be on a tablet or cell phone only?
It might be on a tablet.
I know my smart TV will not do it because they don't want you on a giant screen because whatever. But Hawaii Warriors, here's where we go. Last year, they had first-year head coach Timmy Chang, who, if you know anything about college football, not just Hawaii, not just Mountain West, not just black football, Timmy Chang's a pretty good, darn good quarterback. One of the, I believe he's still top five all-time passing yardage
for a
career.
No, I believe he's still number one all-time passing in this program's history.
No, I meant NCAA history.
Oh,
I know Case Keenum passed him recently, but he's up there.
Yeah,
he played.
He's still like second or third or something like that. Yeah,
he's a dude. People know him. He slings the ball, and him taking over for Todd Graham recently. So that was a fiasco in itself. So his first year, obviously, kind of a minimum year zero type of stuff. They also all players of portal, gained a few players here and there. What did they go last year? They only won a couple games. They were close
they
to
were
a lot of
last
10. Year. That's right. I was going to say 2-10, but no, they played more games. 3-10. They were fun to watch last year, as what you expect from Hawaii. Not necessarily the Nick Rolovich run and shoot, but they want to sling the ball around, pass it a lot. Yeah, they beat Nevada and UNLV, plus they beat Duquesne. A couple somewhat close games, like that San Diego State game, a couple one position games for CSU, Wyoming, Utah State. They were not too far off from maybe getting to a bowl game this past year. It's just going to take some time with the new coach, new staff, and just kind of build it up with a huge roster turnover.
Yeah, I mean, they went into last year, you know, having, you know, so much roster turnover and with a new coaching staff in place, not just the head coach, but, you know, new coordinators on both sides of the ball, you know, new faces everywhere. And so they definitely had a lot of challenges to overcome in Chang's first year. You know, some of them, you know, perhaps unforeseen. You know, they had just as many injuries on both sides of the ball as any other team in the Mountain West. But I think, you know, as weird as it may sound to, you know, outsiders, you know, even finishing 3-10 was probably outperforming expectations.
Yeah, you look at New Mexico and Nevada. Nevada had new head coach Ken Wilson, not many wins. So
yeah,
they,
you know, and because they were starting from such a hole in terms of like experience.
Yeah.
It obviously wasn't perfect, you know, I think, but you could see enough improvement over the course of the season in different ways, even if it never really fully came together. You know, one example that I sort of drew upon to really sort of illustrate this point is the fact that when they played their five non-conference games in the first half of the season, they allowed 7.33 yards per play. Not great by any stretch.
Their first three games were losing by 4 to 5 touchdowns.
Exactly. And in conference play, in the 8 games that they played within the Mountain West, that figure dropped to 6.16. And granted, both of those were still dead last among teams in the conference. But I mean, there's little doubt that, you know, when you looked, if you were watching the games and you were looking at this team closely, it was a better team by the second half of last year than it was that we saw in August and September. And so, you know, the challenge for them heading into 2023 is, okay, they overperformed once. Can they do it again with a whole new set of challenges at their, you know, along their path? You know, they're fully installing the run and shoot once again on offense. You know, they
Yes.
have, you know, plenty of youth that I would imagine is going to be expected to contribute on both offense and defense. And, you know, some of last year's strengths, you know, like the offensive line, are sort of rebuilding in some sense. And so it's the situation is not quite the same. You know, I think on paper, they may still be another year or two away from truly opening the competitive window. But I
Yeah,
do
they
think
totally,
that,
yeah.
but I do think that based on recent history, you know, there are plenty of reasons to expect that there could continue to be a thorn in the side of everybody else in the Mountain West.
Yeah, I mean, look at just real quick last year, only two conference games that overall. They only won two games of conference. They beat Nevada and UNLV. So maybe they should paint. Should we have painted the cannon green because they beat both Nevada schools? So that's something to consider.
I don't know. I don't know if anybody in Nevada would allow that, but
I know,
can't say
but
I can't just
only
say they didn't earn that.
exactly. So only two of the games were double digit losses in conference play. San Jose State
Yeah.
27-14, Fresno 55-13. Everything else was those one possession games in conference play. Shad. So like they were knocking on the door for everybody. So like you said, if they could turn change a couple of things here or there with obviously new people coming in, one area where they was kind of go to quarterback, it's gonna be Brandon Schrager. Brandon Schrager taking over once again. So in that position, one thing I noticed, it's not necessarily on him, but it's just kind of the offense overall. So our buddy Pete Futak put this up at CFN, collegefootballnews.com. So when they went to the conference title game a couple years ago, I know it's gonna be now 4 years ago, but this kind of shows you where you need to be a really good team. Their third down conversion was 47% complete, which is pretty good. Last year was 34.5%. So that's a big difference. And in four games, when they converted 40% or more, they went 3-1. So it's kind of a dummy statement. If the offense moves the ball better, they will clearly play better. But that just shows like that's not a that 34.5%. That's one out of every three. That's not good on third down conversions. So that's one area wherever it's Schrager, wherever it's the new offense, like if they're going to pass the ball a lot more, because he's one of the most, if not the most, him and Chavon Cordero at San Jose State, or what are they, probably the most experienced quarterbacks in the conference, I would say. Does that sound about right?
You know,
Maybe.
when you really think about it, they might be.
Yeah, Air Force new quarterback, New Mexico new quarterback. Doug Brunfeld's been hurt or played a couple years. Nevada, we don't know really what's going on. San Diego State, Boise State. Yeah, I think they might be. So he's one of the more experienced guys out there. So hopefully that experience with this new offense can help get that going, because the run and shoot, they're going to want to, and we've mentioned this before periodically, run and shoot clearly. It's not necessarily a clock. Let's run four plays, like a play every 10 seconds. They're going to want to set up. They're going to want to have four receivers, maybe five. Running shoes, basically five almost every time, four minimum. And so they're not necessarily going to be running the clock, run pace. They could, but it'll be a thing where they manipulate the defense. Okay, you need all these DBs out here with the experienced quarterback, and slowly, because Timmy Chang's doing a good thing. He's slowly moving to it, because it's not too far-fetched, because when they had Nick Rolovich, Todd Graham, was he there for 2 years? Is that it?
2020, 2021.
So not very long. So it wasn't. So there could be a couple of players who were back when Rolovich was running doing the run and shoot a couple of years ago. Not many to these guys now. So it's not super unfamiliar. So Timmy Chang doing a slow move, going from what Todd Graham ran to what he wants to run now, similar to what Rolovich ran. And it's not far-fetched for why historically to run 3 to 5 wide. So having that experienced quarterback could be a thing where if they just get that third down conversion up and keep the tempo in their favor, that's going to be a big thing. They did lose a backup quarterback, Cameron Cooper, to transfer portal. So they do lose some depth there, but he didn't play last year. So that's the one big concern. If Schrager goes down, that's where I could see a problem with not having a backup that's played much, if at all.
Well, I think, you know, I think the established backup would probably be Joey Yellen, who split time, you know,
A
split
little bit,
starting
yeah.
time with Shager in the first half of the season. You know, he had three starts in non-conference play before, you know, Shager really took the role for himself. But I think it's telling that when you look at conference play in particular, Timmy Chang wasn't shy about putting a lot on Braden Shager's plate. You know, because in, at least in terms of like pass attempts per game among the conference among the quarterbacks in Mountain West play, no one was throwing the ball more often than he was, 36.5 passes per game. And granted, The numbers don't necessarily look that impressive. He only completed 54% of his throws, 54.1, only 5.8 yards per attempt. But if you dig a little further into the numbers, there's a pretty decent case that I think you can build that he might be a pretty sound breakout candidate this year.
I could see that
Yeah,
because he had 10 interceptions can be improved upon, 13 touchdowns. If he plays full time, that could go up to maybe closer to 20 with him starting literal every game and not necessarily with Yellen last year, kind of splitting a little bit of time here or there.
So if you're looking to make the optimist's case for Shager and by extension this run and shoot offense, some of the numbers that Pro Football Focus put out there, I think, tell you most or sort of provide most of the evidence for it. Among the quarterbacks in the conference who had at least 100 pass attempts, there were 16 of them altogether. Sorry, I'm just switching tabs real quick. So
That's
Shager
okay.
had a
I was making it.
4.5% big time throw rate. And he averaged, his average depth of target was exactly 10 yards. Both of those were sixth in the Mountain West. So he was slightly above average in terms of his ability to push the ball downfield and the frequency with which he was asked to do it. And maybe just as importantly, he also had a turnover worthy rate despite having 10 interceptions, only 3.7%. That was actually one of the lower figures anywhere in the Mountain West. By way of comparison, like Talen Green, for example, his turnover worthy rate percentage was 4.6%. And I think maybe most importantly, and in terms of the pressures that turned into sacks, second lowest figure in the Mountain West, only 9.9%. And he also had to deal with a drop rate among his receivers of 14%. The second highest rate in the Mountain West. So, which is a long way of saying that, whatever improvements that he is able to make isn't going to be simply on him alone. We'll talk more about the receivers in a few minutes, but it's a long way of saying that, there is a lot of evidence to suggest that, with a full offseason to truly acclimate to this offense, with a full offseason to get familiar, with the pass catchers who are likely to see the largest roles in this offense, with better health around them in that particular unit. There's
Yeah,
a lot to
that's
like here. That's what I'm saying.
no, there is the offense going to be there's room for improvement for sure. Whether it be, because one thing too with Shager there, that's, or I guess him and Yellen, 20 total sacks. Yeah, that's okay. So that's not, it's what, just over one a game. That's not unreasonable, but improve that a little bit. Like there's a lot of small things to do. Get to 55 to 59%, fewer interceptions, a couple more TDs. Like there's small increments can improve, and an offense that's not typically run a lot, that's an area where, like I said, where there's a lot to like. Because why was, again, they're close. If a couple things happened last year, they win 5 games, 6 games possibly, and the offense is, like I mentioned, a third down conversion, things like that. So with the run and shoot, how much do we care about the running backs? Like
You
how,
should care a
and
lot.
that's what I'm making sure. I know rhetorical for me, but definitely want you to answer. But that's what people want people need to know about. Because they do, they lose Dedrick Parson, who is no longer in the program. So, but even if they do one running back, it doesn't mean they're not going to run. Because think of it this way, guys: if you spread out, if you go five wide, or sorry, I can't go five wide running back. Apologies, four wide and running back, you're splitting the field out where there's you have a fewer line and one less linebacker, or maybe one defensive lineman or whatever defense you're going up against. And they're big running plays, even with the quarterback draw, because that's a play that will be run with the running shoot offense. And I'm guessing it'll be like Tylan Hines. I'm not guessing. Tylan Hines, who, what did he average last year? 7 yards, 7.6 yards per attempt
7.6 yards per carry.
on only 83 carries. So keep that in mind. It wasn't a full workload to 150 plus. And so that correlation is not going to be there. If it was, well, he'd be like one of the best running backs in the country. If he ran 180 times at 7 yards a carry, that'd be wild. He does catch the ball a little bit too. So that's something as well to consider. If they want to do put him in the passing attack, so he's another breakout candidate who could be. Because I talked to the guys at on Hawaii radio out there, like asked about Tylan Hines. I don't recall where we had him on our. I don't think he's on all conference list. I don't remember if he made our four deep, but they asked me about him, and like we clearly said he won't keep that pace up. But if he Dude, if he's 5.2, that's really, really good. If he's 5 yards a carry, that would be something quite amazing. And he's not going to be in this running shoot offense. You're not going to be, obviously, it's not heavy running. So he's not going to be leading the conference in like 300 plus carries like Brad Roberts got last year. Like him getting
No.
200 might be a lot. Like he might be in the range of Tyree Robinson 157. I think that could be a range. That's what, 12 a game, maybe. He might get a little bit more, but he's not going to be running 20 plus a game. So getting about 15, 10 to
No.
15, not 10, but 15 carries a game probably seems about right. Because last year, Jedrick Parson, when they were not doing a run and shoot, still had 14.3 carries per game. So if he's in that range, which I could see, that's 187 carries. So if he can get to about 500 carry on that, because he did lead, he was second in the conference in yards per play last year running the ball. But if he can pull back, like he's going to pull back, we all know. But it's important, like you mentioned, it's very important because it's going to keep teams. Hawaii has to keep teams honest when running the ball and passing the ball in this type of offense with four wide receivers or three and a tight end with a running back. You're going to have to respect the run because it's similar, like the reverse effect of Air Force. If they take the step back and they're focused just on the receivers, he's going to bust out and blow out a 30-yard run, a 25, 40-yard run when there's only four guys, like five guys rushing the quarterback, especially if they drop it to teams that want a zone or mixed coverage to help those crossing routes with linebackers who may take a step back. It could be five versus three on the offensive line, and it could be a breakout play occasionally. So that's a reason why this, and then even with the quarterback, like QB drawer, they might even do a little. Did they do? I don't know if they did. Remind me that. Did Nick Rolovich run like a quick option occasionally? Like they dart to the side where it's an option play with all the receivers and one back? Was that something they did in this offense?
I can't
I
quite
don't.
recall, but I know that Cole McDonald was fairly mobile.
Maybe that's what it was with him.
So
Yeah. 'Cause the,
I guess it wouldn't shock me if they wanted to do something similar with Shager in the backfield. But I think to your original point, it is going to be vitally important that they do find some counterbalance to an offense that is going to be pass heavy. Because, everybody remembers Cole McDonald, but how many people remember that Myles Reed also had 900 yards rushing
Yeah.
when the Warriors won the division in 2019? Running backs are just as important in this offense, or they can be just as important in this offense as the quarterback, as the pass catchers. I think maybe the best possible example of that from recent memory, D'Ossamy St. Juste,
Yeah, it was really good.
who had over 3,000 yards in his career with the Warriors. So that to me makes Hines one of the most interesting players anywhere in the Mountain West. Because if you look at some of his numbers, relative to other backs in the Mountain West, it's kind of staggering what he was able to accomplish last year in such a small sample size. Like, for example, on Pro Football Focus, they have, yards per contact, or yards after contact per attempt.
Yeah.
And he was basically, so like everybody knows Ashton Jeanty and how good he was last year. They basically averaged the exact same amount of yards after contact per attempt last year. Jeanty and Hines, 3.88 versus 3.87. Hines also had 33 missed tackles on just 83 rushing attempts, which was 13th in the conference. And, for the sake of comparison, there were at least, a couple of running backs who had more attempts who had fewer missed tackles. And then maybe, to the point about like yards per carry, that really to really emphasize the fact that he has the potential to be a home run hitter in the backfield. The other stat that I really looked at that really caught my attention, breakaway percentage, which is, the PFF measures it as rushing yardage on designed attempts of more than 15 yards. And Hines was third among all Mountain West running backs in that regard, 54.6% of his breakaway percentage,
Ooh.
which is a long way of saying like he had 18 runs of more than 10 yards in just, that small sample size of rushing attempts. He's not likely to do it all himself though. And so it's going to be just as important that they find other guys because, being listed at what, he's like 5'7" and 175 pounds, like he's not going to be that bell cow type running back. So they are going to need contributions, in a similar vein from other veterans like Naz J. Bryant-Lee, Jordan Johnson is still around. So they have other running backs in that mold of, someone who could sort of slash through the tackles and maybe, take advantage of an offensive line that, may not be as veteran heavy as it was last year, but was still pretty good about opening holes most of the time. I think the other thing to keep an eye on, whether it's Hines or someone else in this group, it's going to be just as important that whoever spends time in that backfield, that they can be an outlet in the passing game too, because Parson, for as strong as he was as a runner, it's easy to remember or easy to forget rather. He also had 58 catches over the last 2 years as well.
Well, and so did, oh, shoot, what's his name we just talked about? Tyon Hines had not many, but he still was productive. He had what, 15 catches, I think it was? Nine for 82. I apologize. So when he got the ball, he's productive. So, and like you mentioned with Parson, it's a thing, and it's something they do in the offense. So that's going to just help everything out. Like just more touches for those guys with Hines, that breakaway he has, and just 7 yards every time he gets the ball, about 8 yards every time when including the receptions. It's good. You can't sleep on this unit just because they're pass heavy, the running game. You can't leave that alone, ignore it for defenses.
That's right.
Who's catching the ball for these guys? What do they got receiving wise?
That is a really good question
Because if they're
because,
going to run and shoot, that's fine. That's 4 to 5 wide. That's going to be a bit.
and it doesn't seem like much, considering that Zion Bowens was the departed Zion Bowens. He's graduated, I believe. Only led the team 35 catches, 494 yards, and four touchdowns, but they are also having to replace six of the nine players who had more than 20 targets last year. So there are going to be a lot of passes to go around. And one of the major questions is, okay, well, who's going to come down with them? Because the closest thing they have to an established option is Jonah Finoke. Missed a little bit of time with injury last year. Seven games, though, 27 catches, 312 yards, and one touchdown. I have to think that, he's probably going to land one of those three or four starting spots. If I had to guess as to who else is likely to start the majority of the games, I would look at the guys who also got a lot of run last year, Jaylen Waltjens, Tomatoa Mokial-Autumnulala. Those two combined for 42 catches and three touchdowns last year. Kwale Nishigaya is back from injury. He was only in four games last year, but he was expected to contribute out of the slot as well. They also brought in Stephen McBride, Kansas transfer portal. So like they've got a number of guys. Like we haven't even mentioned other guys like Chuqui Hines and Nick Senecal. There are plenty of options that could feasibly step up. And like we haven't even talked about the tight ends either, which was another thing that really separated Timmy Chang's run and shoot last year, at least when Caleb Phillips was an all-conference tight end, which
Yeah,
is
also
not something that you would have ever thought of from a Hawaii offense. It's not something that
like,
is typically featured that position, but they've got guys who could feasibly step up and hold down a role like that. Guys like Grayson Morgan, Oki Salavea, Devin Taufa. So they've got a number of players who could feasibly step up and be part of that group that catches 20 or that sees 20, 30 targets. They may not necessarily have like one John Ursua type, but they might have three or four guys who could end the year with something like 40 catches for 500, 600 yards if everything goes their way.
and it'll just bring versatility to the offense,
Yeah.
because they're going, like I said, they're going 3, 4 wide, and it would help with the running game. You have a big, got bigger guy like to clip somebody or just kind of fade somebody away on like some sort of play action or even just kind of a delay RPO type stuff. Also, should mention transfer, like possibly Stephen McBride from Kansas could be a guy, because it's gonna be a volume thing. There's gonna be, if you're running out there 3 to 4 receivers, three to five actually. Receivers every play, probably tight end, whatever you want to call, about four, average of four a play. You got to go 10 deep, right? For receiver slash tight end. You're going to have a huge group of guys back there if you're running so many guys out there. I know the subbing situation is what you want to limit, because so defenses can't sub, because if you don't sub, they can't sub. But you still want to go deep if you're rolling out 3 to 5 receivers every play. And so and with them throwing more than even last year, there's going to be an opportunity to abound for somebody to come up in, whether it's one person or remember a couple of years ago, like guys like Marcus Kemp, where again, guys like could three guys have like over 65 catches or something like that a few years ago. when it all those guys coming in. I'm not sure if it'll be that type of a
That's like the
scenario.
that's like if everything goes right and they hit the ground running from week zero onwards, I think.
But I could see a couple guys being like, if they're gonna throw as much as we think, not that number, but there's it's gonna be volume play. There's gonna be guys who you could have your number six receiver have 25 catches or something on this team if they throw as much as we think they could. But it all doesn't matter unless they get like running the ball well, then like offensive line, which is well, kind of changing, overhauling again a little bit, right? Not
It's
necessarily.
over, it's overhauling a lot of it.
Yeah, and
And
that's a
that
thing.
is really critical because the offensive line for as experienced as it was last year was a, I would say a relative strength by a lot of the metrics that I like to look at. Like they were right around the national average, for example, in line yards per carry generated. You know, 69th overall among FBS offenses, 2.71 in that category. They were above average in opportunity rate generated, 49.7, which is 45th overall. And that's and that, like I said, is a credit, I would say, Tynes as well as that offensive line unit. But they were also pretty good about, you know, short yardage situations as well. You know, power success rate, 79.3%. That was 12th overall. And when it came to protecting Shager, giving him and taking advantage of of his quick release, only a 4.6% sack rate allowed as well. That was 34th in the country. But now you're heading into 2023, and you might have four new starters up front.
Yeah, they have a center returning with Ilikai Tuivasa, but they need more guys. They've trained like transfer Josh Adkins is coming in from University of Houston, but they need to find guys who've played and can step in right away because Vanderbilt, they start off with, I know that's not an amazing team, but last year they got their butt kicked versus Vanderbilt. So if this off the good thing about this off with the off with the run and shoot, they're gonna it's quick passes. So you don't necessarily need with already well, whatever. They're losing all the guys, so that doesn't apply here. But if you're throwing the ball quickly, your offensive line needs to doesn't necessarily need to give you that 3 seconds drop back and wait and wait and wait as often. It'll definitely need to be there because there'll be times where Schrager's going through his reads 1 through 5 to find who's open. But with the quick passing they do, that could offset maybe potential offensive line issues or just inexperience of playing this type of scheme. So that's something that you could think could come into play where, okay, if they release the ball quickly, odds of you getting sacked, less likely. So that's kind of a positive with kind of with rebuilding and finding 4 new starters from last year's so offensive line.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level. The who, what, when, where, and why you are rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
All right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying like, to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Yeah, and it's not to say that they don't have some familiar names or some guys who saw a lot of playing time last year who could step up into those roles. You mentioned Tuivasa at center. That seems pretty much set.
Yeah,
you know, they also bring back Sergio Muisao, who played over 500 snaps last year. You got starting time at both center and guard. I would imagine that he's likely to end up at probably one of the two ladder spots. They also bring back, you know, and they also bring back Solo Vaipulu, who comes into 2023 as maybe the most one of the most experienced offensive linemen anywhere in the Mountain West at this point. I think that the major key is, you know, who's going to step up and replace the pair of tackles that have moved on, Austin Hop and Neil Manning, because it could be, you know, a guy like former Utah transfer Luke Felix Fualalo, could be a younger guy like, you know, Kaina DeCambra. It could be Atkins, like you mentioned, could be someone like Murray Taragi. So they've got options up front, but there is a lot more that is unknown about how this unit is going to come together. And, you know, I don't think we need to, you know, state the obvious, but, you know, a quality offensive line is going to go a long way towards, you know, enabling this run and shoot to operate at peak performance.
Yeah, it's definitely, yes, that is a thing. If in the run and shoot, because it's all about efficiency. It's no different than it's also like a timing based offense too, most likely. Mm-hmm. Like the run option with Air Force or they're the pulling guards, you know what you're doing every play. So it's a dummy statement. Oh yeah, offensive line's good, they'll be fine, they'll be better. But I think with the coaching they have, with how well they did last year, it's a combination. You know, you mentioned, yeah, these guys didn't start necessarily last year, but 500 plus snaps, a guy played at University of Utah, comes over and plays. University of Houston is a pretty good level. They come over and play. They've had experience playing, just not starting playing experience. So it's like, okay, if you have 500 snaps, that's what, seven games maybe worth, I'm thinking? Six games? I don't know how many snaps. Depends what your efficiency was offensively, but that's a good number of games to be played. But I think the coaching staff helping with how many the sack, what would you say, they're top 35 in the sack, sacks allowed percentage, yeah. Correct? Sack rate, I mean, that's the proper term.
Yeah.
Coaches know what they're doing. So clearly the backups who learned under this game last year, guys who are part-time playing, this unit, new faces, got to step up and play well. But I think there's some reasonable confidence that they'll be okay. They may not be as good as last year, but maybe they don't have to be. But it's an area where I'm not overly concerned just with how they performed last year and what we expect moving more toward a quicker passing game. They don't need to be elite. Because I'd rather block for 1.5 seconds than 4 seconds, right? That's a lot easier. So that's an area where I think they'll be fine. It's just like, who's going to take over? And hopefully there's not a rotational thing or guys bounce in on the lineup, because we've seen Boise State notoriously over the past couple of years, six offensive starting lineups on the offensive line in 7 games. So you don't want that. If they can keep a consistent group, that goes for any team, that'll be quite helpful. And I think they have enough talent to where, like most of the guys you mentioned, three of them are pretty good. It's just a tackle spot you mentioned that's going to be the biggest concern.
Yeah.
All right. So, what are we ready for defense?
Yeah.
Are they going to not allow like 40 points a game this year? Not that they're at 40.
That depends. But... that depends. Because, and I think, you know, the way that you have to look at this Warriors defense, or at least the way that I'm choosing to look at it, it looks like they have the makings of a sound foundation. But at the same time, there is still pretty clearly plenty left to accomplish on the side of the ball. You know, because in addition to what I mentioned earlier, as far as, you know, the improvements that they made last year, even though they still finished dead last, you know, I think it is also worth noting at this juncture that, you know, in terms of points per drive allowed, for example, they were on this side of the ball, they were 123rd overall among FBS defenses, over 3 points per drive allowed. You know, same thing with available yards percentage. You know, they gave up nearly 60% of available yards per drive, 123rd there as well. And, you know, that same kind of inefficiency carries over to a number of other stats too. You know, opportunity rate, 113th. You know, stuff rate, you know, their ability to stop plays at or behind the line of scrimmage, 15.2%. That was 100th in the country. Mm-hmm. Same thing with their team sack rate, only 4.7. That was 110th. And so they've got some pieces that could make up the foundation, not only for this year, but maybe even for next year as well. But, you know, if we want to start up front with the defensive line, you know, part of what's going to help this unit take a step forward is just, you know, coalescing around the guys who sort of led the charge last year. And if I'm looking at a duo that is sort of like the tip of the proverbial spear, you might say, I look at John Tuitupo in the middle with the 3.5 sacks on the interior. And I look at Jonah Kohahawai-Welch, who had 7.5 TFLs off the edge. They need more guys to, I would say, to step up around that tandem. And I think they have some interesting candidates, but I'm interested to sort of get your opinion on it first.
Well, one thing that'll help, because the year before last, like last year, it was almost 35 points a game they gave up. Do you know how many starters they lost from 2 years ago to last year?
A lot.
10.
Yeah.
So if, depending on what you consider a starter, because it can always vary, there's about 9 starters back from last year to this year. And we always mention, or I mentioned a bunch, where it's like, just because you have, like, they were terrible last year. There's no doubt about it. They were bad defensively for the most part. They get some guys in secondary we'll get to later. But experience playing, they turned around from the first half to second half with all the losing to New Mexico State by multi-scores is embarrassing. Once they got to conference play, it was, like I mentioned, it was all these one-score games except for two. So they did improve during that time, but they do need more playmakers to go after the quarterback and stop the running attack. And like what you mentioned, those two players, they are legit the ones they need to come in and play their guys' experience lead of the way. Like, I don't know, could Andrew Choi be something where he had a handful of starts, like 5 TFLs last year, guys like that, could he be somebody? I think it's a possibility. I just think with the experience they have and actually playing games, like, it's no small, it's like, they played the game. But I think with these type of guys, just seeing the field last year for the first time as a starter, there's not, the learning curve's much slower. The defense is going to be the same as last year, essentially. They just now need guys like, oh, I played last year. It's not my first time playing San Jose State or Air Force. I've played this team before. I know what to expect. And so I think that could go a long way with the experience of starting, even though they were terrible last year. Like, odds are they're not going to be worse, and that's kind of a low bar to set. But getting I just think that's where it will turn out to be, that if they get to 30 points per game, that's not good, but that's enough room. But I expect up front, those type of guys you mentioned, getting to the quarterback is going to be, it's a dumb statement, but it's going to be guys they're going to get it done. And it shows one of those guys where I think he had, 5 TFLs last year, mentioned, like, those type of guys getting that pressure with the two experienced guys back there who are making plays, like, oh, well, maybe we'll need to double this guy, or, you know, there's open lanes up for the linebackers, and we'll get to those guys in a moment. But I think they have, like you mentioned, the tip of the spear is there. I just think guys around them, that'll give them opportunity to where, you know, as you get doubled, triple teamed, you do a little a scheme away from them a little bit. Not that, Matt, the teams really need a scheme away from high defense, probably not. But even if they do a little bit, it'll open up plays for these other guys. And
well, I'll also add that this unit could be considerably deeper than last year's defensive line too. You know, not only because they hit the transfer portal exceptionally hard to fill in the gaps up front. Like, they brought in a ton of dudes. You know, they brought in Josh Jerome from Eastern Washington, Patrick Hisatake from Cal, Kuau Peihopa, and
Washington.
Who else am I forgetting? There was another guy they brought in from Washington. I forget his name off the top of my head. Siaosi Pinnell, excuse me. Those two guys are in from UW. Anthony Sagapotulele, transferred in from UNLV. Elijah Robinson from East Carolina. So they've got a lot of potential newcomers that could step up and be a part of a rotation, so that they may not necessarily need, like, one guy to sort of be the one true pass rusher, I guess you might say. Because they also have, you know, guys who, you know, you mentioned Choi as one candidate. They also bring back, you know, Tariq Jones from last year. And one guy that I'm very interested to see what he can do to take a step forward, Ezra Amaivalo. Didn't play a whole lot last year, and he had roughly 350 snaps altogether. I think he only had, like, one or two starts. I forget off the top of my head. But at the same time, you know, according to Pro Football Focus, he also had an overall grade, a run defense grade of 86.7, which I believe was fifth among all defenders in the Mountain West. And granted, you know, on the surface, like, you know, only 20 tackles, only 3.5 TFLs may not seem like much, But again, you're talking about a guy who's playing roughly like 50, 60% of the snaps that other, more elite players in the conference were playing up in the trenches. So like, if he continues to be a part of that rotation, I'm very interested to see if he can get more run as a starter in 2023.
Yeah, that's if, like, again, it goes back to the like running back situation. Like, okay, if we give you this production or opportunity, will it stay the same, lower down, or just be still dang pretty good, but just not elite when you play, as like you mentioned, half a game. So all those type of things, like experience coming back, more playing time, it'll all add up. But I think you do mention the depth there. How good do you think this linebacking group can be? Because what they have, like guys like Isaiah Tufaga, Logan Taylor, they have all these guys coming back or joining this team and playing from last year. Like that area, probably. I know they get Cam Stone and get to a second, but the linebacking group is going to be legit and going to cause problems for people.
Yeah, I think they have a trio that they probably feel pretty good about. You mentioned Tufaga and Taylor. They also bring back Noah Kemba, who started a handful of games as well. I think the one thing that absolutely has to improve from last year is just, improving the fundamentals, wrapping up, taking down defenders with more consistency. Because one thing that really jumped out to me when I was doing research for this podcast, and again, according to Pro Football Focus, there were 15 Mountain West linebackers last year who played at least 100 snaps and had a missed tackle percentage of 20% or greater. Four of them played for Hawaii.
Okay.
Three of them happened to be Tufaga, Kemba, and Taylor. So if I'm looking for one thing that could make a world of difference, even if they improve it just a little bit, that's where I would start. Like these linebackers are going to have a huge impact in their ability to keep, like, for example, let's say a 4 or 5 yard run from being like a 6 or 7 yard run. Think little things like that, that may not necessarily show up on the play-by-play sheet, but can make a world of difference from drive to drive and from week to week. That's one of those sort of incremental things that I have to think, Timmy Chang and defensive coordinator Jacob Yoro have on their minds when they're looking forward to how to put this defense together in 2023.
Yeah, it's doing all those type of things because, they are looking at the tackle rate. They were worse than conference in PFF and tackle for PFF on the defensive side, which, sorry, if you mentioned, I apologize, I was pulling up the sort. Surprising to see Wyoming pretty low as well, but they're the lowest in tackle. Rush defense, I believe the lowest as well in PFF, so pressure. Short answer, Matt, they weren't good defensively, so I was looking at all these other numbers here. But you're right, they have, if tack, just dumb fundamentals, do what you're supposed to do. Don't let the guy get stiff arm you. Don't pull him by the jersey. Take him down two hands and be strong about it. But you're right, the trio of linebackers there, it's just attack mode. Like, just let him go and play and try to just let him get to the backfield. And they see it's simple, make plays. I know it's dumb to say, I'll just tackle, do this, man. Like, the fundamentals, that's important. But it all comes back to, like, this kind of lame, but, like, you can't be worse than last year. And that's easy and cliche to say. But I think looking at their best players they have overall, like, majority are probably in defense of what they have coming back or coming in, whether it be portal or returning production starters. So defense has clearly the biggest strides to make just because they're so bad last year. And returning all these starters and, like I mentioned, Tufaga, these type of guys, Taylor and everybody coming in and wanting to improve from last year, it's going to be there. And so the secondary will be interesting, Matt, because they got Cam Stone coming to town. It's pretty good, right?
He is pretty good.
Yeah, their secondary, it all comes back to the same, like getting beat up, getting passed around, allowing points. But him coming in will solidify a secondary right there. That'll definitely help when they play teams I don't have the schedule entirely. I'll get that in a second. But when they're playing teams that want to pass the ball a lot, he's got to have a shutdown corner, shutdown defensive back when you're playing teams that have elite receivers. Because when they got Oregon, that could beat Oregon, okay. They don't want to get embarrassed first New Mexico State, so shut down those guys. It's like, San Jose State doesn't have great receivers. New Mexico, not really. They got San Jose State to worry about, and really CSU. So maybe I'll take away from my point a little bit because we're playing teams aren't going to pass a ton because Stanford's not very good. We'll talk about Vanderbilt in a minute, but this kind of helps and hurts a bit, because it'll help, because if they're playing teams like Nevada, how great receivers do they have? Air Force doesn't have many. They can just literally shut that guy down and then allow, no need to do like a zone defense or kind of scheme around it when they're playing teams that don't have elite receivers, where these guys can like, I got you one-on-one or something. So I think that can go a big way for majority of the schedule. Then it could help the front seven concentrate on just attack and, you know, tackle people like you're supposed to.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to say that last year the secondary had its moments, even though by and large they ended up getting picked on more often than not. Like they allowed a completion rate of just under 64%, and they allowed almost 8 yards per attempt, 7.9. Both of those figures were dead last in the Mountain West. But I do think that the talent is there, or at least it might be there, for the Warriors to be able to take a step forward. Like you mentioned Stone, you know, that's an obvious pickup, 35 tackles, 10 pass breakups, and 2 interceptions last year at Wyoming. But, you know, you remember that Verdell Edwards, you know, who had 3 interceptions and 5 pass breakups himself, pretty quietly had a decent year last year. And Peter Manuma, who stepped into the starting lineup as a true freshman, 70 tackles, 4 pass breakups, 3 TFLs, 2 interceptions, overall PFF grade of 74.1. I don't understand why he didn't get more attention in the same way that, like, for example, an Ike Larson did. Because he was definitely on the field for considerably more time than Larson did, and played pretty well, all things considered, even as the secondary was shuffling around him. You know, he didn't really establish himself until like 5-6 weeks into the season. But then you look around and you realize that, like, at one cornerback spot, you know, Edwards started all but 2 games. At the other cornerback spot, they had 3 different players who started at least 1 game. You know, when Metagi Thompson got lost for the year with injury, you know, they had 1, 2, 3 different players start at the other safety position opposite him. So, you know, I do think that Manuma is one of those, you know, up and rising stars that definitely deserves more attention. And like the linebackers, like the defensive line, they could be deeper too if some of their transfers here and some of their youngsters really step up into more prominent roles, and if they can handle those roles. Like, you know, they have a Kaulana Makaula started a couple games last year. So did Mekki Pei. He had 4 starts. Thompson is back to 100%. He started 4 games. You know, they brought in Kilanahe Mendiola-Jensen from UNLV. You know, they brought in Justin Sinclair, College of San Mateo, the JUCO ranks. He had 7 interceptions in 2 years there out here in California. Caleb Brown had 5 interceptions and 14 pass breakups at Butler Community College in Kansas. So now all of a sudden they have options. And while they are likely to be tested, you know, to see whether or not, you know, deep offenses, I think, are going to be tempted to see whether they can soften up this defense by attacking them down the field. But they have the makings to be able to take a step forward and be able to defend, I think, a little more consistency.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, how many points given up and replacing guys? I do think you mentioned, I was looking at Peter Manuma's stuff, like while you're chatting, I'm like, you're right. Like, he not only does he get a couple pass breakups, he's made a face for him out there for getting the quarterback as well. Mm-hmm. And so we had 3 TFLs and sacks. That's another wrinkle to the secondary defensively, where I don't recall if it was because the defensive line wasn't great, like we mentioned before. The front seven was just not great. If they needed that help, or if it was a conscious effort to have him step up to the line and attack running backs or go after the QB. So that's just a little something different that, like, he made lots of plays. It's just shows he could be anywhere in the field. TFLs, couple picks, pass breakups. So those type of things will all come into play for what they could do. I think Dino will be pretty good, because I know Stone comes, he's, the good thing about Stone, he comes in from Wyoming, plays within the conference. He's familiar with majority of the league. So it's not, because that does matter with, even though he switched teams, you learn your scheme, but you kind of know some tendencies and you're familiar with the conference. That's going to help as well. I do think it's going to be better than last year. Like we all said, they're so bad. It's my broken record. It's so bad, it's going to be better no matter what. But I do think, like, you're correct on what they can do and certain players. Like, if Menuda can take the next step from last year to this year, like, up for playing more, whatever, be more snaps, for just more experience. Because a lot of big steps these guys take is going to high school to FBS is a big jump. Going, once you get any starter or freshman year one to year two, that's going to be just make him more comfortable and be able to make plays. And if you have a, like, Stone back there to help cover and just experience out there of what he's seen, it's going to help everything overall. And I think Dean will be fine. And partially because, like, we go through the schedule, they're not facing too many teams that are just going to light it up in the air. And so that'll help this unit just lock that down and allow everybody else to concentrate on the other type of things on the offenses they're facing.
Mm-hmm.
Anything aside, are we going to kicking, punting, return specialist here?
So special teams has been fine, I guess you might say, for Hawaii over the last several years. But it may be, I mean, there is definitely room for improvement, and because, you know, not only does Stone give them an asset in the defensive backfield, he's also an asset as a kick returner as well. Like, he had a kick return touchdown last year, did he not? Or was it 2 years ago?
I can check, but even let me check real quick. But you're right. He's a guy back there who can do it. So, like, have him take all positions over, Matt. You know what I mean? Like, let him do those type of things. But if you have the guy who's done it before, why mess with it?
It was two seasons ago, by the way.
Okay. But give him the chance to do that, and why not? That's an explosive playmaker. Good for them.
Yeah, and then as far as, you know, the rest of special teams, it mostly comes down to one guy, Matthew Shipley.
You
know, to date in his career, 41.1 career yards per punt, 76.4 field goal success rate. So he's been okay. But I do think that, you know, they're, you know, relative to other specialists in the conference, you know, he's, I would say, maybe a tier below the guys above him, you know, guys like Jack Browning, Jonah Dalmas, John Hoyland, and guys like that. But, mm-hmm. you know, at the same time, he was also in that group of three players that I just mentioned. He had, you know, an 80% on field goals last year, 16 of 20 altogether. That was, I believe, a career best. So, you know, he has shown year by year improvement. And I think that that is worth making a note of as well. So, he's I would say rock solid, if not necessarily like a plus plus specialist, let's put it that way.
Okay, so they'll be all right. They'll
I think they'll right. be fine.
All right, schedule time. You ready to talk about the games that they're playing?
Yeah, hopefully
win some. So they open up the season week zero at Vanderbilt. I'm not gonna be you still there?
Yes.
Okay, I had a huge screech in my speaker. I'm like, oh, my headset. I'm like, oh, that sounded weird, like lightning strikes, you hear a little psst. I'm like, oh boy, thought I lost power or something. That was weird. So they go to Vanderbilt in Nashville. Remember, we talked about the scores last year. It was not close. And Vanderbilt wasn't good last year. Vanderbilt did get
better last year.
Still not good, but yeah, better. But they were, some people I think are playing tricks on us or anybody, because I think a half a dozen people picked them to win the SEC this year, or at least their division. And they're not winning their SEC division. That's, trust me, that's not happening. So, but this team, it's on the road, so it'll be obviously very difficult. It is a week zero game, so we're going to watch because it's early on. You know how far it is to go to Nashville from Honolulu, Matt? That's far. Extremely far. But as for like what they're seeing with their, it's already a loss for me, but they are playing a lower level team in SEC where I do think there's chances for them to do something. And make it what a two, not a four touchdown loss. But as for like who they have coming back and what's going on this roster, do you think Timmy Chang's like, just don't be worse than last year. Don't be worse than last year against these guys. Cause they do have AJ Swan, a quarterback, and he was fine. He kind of split time a little bit. It's still him, right? It's not Mike Wright anymore. Is that the case?
No, Mike Wright transferred. AJ Swan, you know, stepped up as a starter half of the year.
Okay.
As a true freshman, 58.1% throws completed. Only 6.4 yards per attempt, which maybe has to do with not being able to push the ball down the field as often as they would like. But he had 10 touchdowns and, at least, you know, impressively for a true freshman, 1% interception rate. Pretty solid.
That's pretty good. They one thing they do lose though, Ray Davis went to Kentucky, the running back from last year, and he had over 1,000 yards. That's a big loss for them. And then Mike Wright was their number two leading rusher. So the running game is an area. So they're going to have to lean on, I guess, Patrick Smith as their leading returning rusher, 150 yards. So it's going to be, I think, a lot of the quarterback play, like A.J. Swan, having to step up because they lose the vast majority. They lose 1,600 of the 1,900 rushing yards. That's not good, Matt. So I'd expect a lot of...
At the same time, they've got a pretty good pair of wide receivers at their disposal, too, like Will Shepard.
Oh, yeah.
Last year, 60 catches, 776 yards, and 9 touchdowns. You may recall that he had 2 against Hawaii himself last year. He's back. Jaden McGowan, as a sophomore, 44 catches, 453 yards, 3 touchdowns. He's back. Quincy Skinner averaged 14 yards per carry. So I think, you know, between that trio and Swan under center with a full offseason to, you know, and I would say unquestioned grasp on the on that starting position, the offense could be in line to take a step forward. I think the bigger question is, you know, how they're going to replace some of their big pieces on defense. And we talked about it a little bit during the UNLV podcast as well. You know, the big question I would say overall is, how are they going to replace their star linebacker, Anthony Orji? You know, he was a very big, productive playmaker in the middle of that defense. But they do happen to bring back, you know, CJ Taylor. He's sort of their flex piece in that position. They call it the anchor position in that, I believe it's a 4-2-5 that they play. Led all Vanderbilt defenders with a PFF grade of 74.6, 56 total tackles, 7 TFLs. So they've got some pieces. And I think, you know, even if by SEC standards, you know, they're probably still likely to finish a lot closer to the bottom of the SEC East than the top. I think they still have a talent advantage over Hawaii. So I'm not expecting it to be like a 45-point blowout the same way that it was last year. But I do think that Vanderbilt should be able to hold serve comfortably at home.
Yeah, they'll probably win by 2 touchdowns. Then they play Stanford Friday night. Oh, sorry. I assume it's lost, right, Matt? Do I need to step on that? Or were you saying defeat, right, officially?
Yeah.
Okay, just making sure. Then they play Stanford Friday night at home. Stanford has a new head coach in Troy Taylor after David Shaw. I forget, did he step down or was he actually fired?
No, I believe he just resigned.
Good. Okay. He's a good coach. There's a lot of issues in Stanford. But they get it's a short week. So, like, people, oh, it's a short week here at home, but that's a lot. Like I mentioned, it's a long trip to come back from Vanderbilt, Nashville to Hawaii. To play Friday night. I believe it's Stanford's home opener as well, correct?
I believe so, yeah.
Yes, it is. So a couple of things about Stanford. Like, they lose Tanner McKee this quarter. Tanner McKee, sorry, spaced. He's gone. So they lose their quarterback. New coach, Troy Taylor, who comes up from Sac State, who was really good. Tanner McKee, yeah. But they lose Brigham Taylor, who Sac State, what were they, playoff team a couple years for FCS? Is that correct?
Back-to-back Big Sky champs, I believe.
Big Sky champs. So they bring in experienced coach who's done well. I do remember him from University of Utah, where he wasn't great as OC, so we'll see how this goes. Coming from success at FCS level to now Stanford, which who knows where they'll be at. Break in a new quarterback. But I do believe their key player probably might be like Casey Filkins running the ball, but he only had like not even 500 yards last year, because they're throwing a bit more with McKee there. So they do have an okay run. And again, I say okay running game, like EJ Smith is there as well. They weren't explosive at all offensively. They weren't all that great. And so I don't know what to expect, but they're one of the few teams, Matt, that uses a fullback still. And so that's what kind of we expect. And this is where that we mentioned about the Hawaii's front seven, where there are some playmakers or some good guys. Could potentially have some issues if Stanford decides just to try to bulldoze them over, because they have a huge offensive line as well as usual.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that's likely to be the case. You know, obviously, you know, the Cardinal have to figure out their quarterback situation. You know, they've got at least 3 guys who are probably the front runners to be that QB1. You know, Ari Patu, who was a backup over the last couple of years. Ashton Daniels saw 10 games as a true freshman. They also brought in Justin Lamson from Syracuse to the transfer portal. And to your point about the running game, I do think that that is likely to be a relative strength of theirs. Like both Philkins and Smith, I believe, had season-ending injuries, which helps explain why their production was so low. And EJ Smith, by the way, did you realize he was the son of Emmett Smith?
I did not know that. That's good for him. Keep that running
Fun
back name
fact.
alive.
And they also have at least one pretty reliable player in the passing game in the tight end Benjamin Urosek. Over the last 2 years, 92 catches, 100 or excuse me, 1,100 yards, five touchdowns. He was an all conference second team performer last year. So, whoever wins that QB competition is going to have at least one reliable player that they can count upon. Stanford also, interestingly, might have the best kicker in the country. Joshua Cardy was a Lou Groza Award finalist, which I'm sure is something that a lot of Mountain West football fans listening to the podcast can appreciate.
Yes.
Perfect on field goal attempts last year, 18 of 18, including 13 of them from 40 or more yards. That's impressive.
Not totally. So that's something where it all, hey, every yard counts, right? Kicking special teams,
Yeah.
field
And then
goals.
I do think that they have a fair amount of talent in the front seven. I think the trick is, they're losing so much on both sides of the ball that, they need a lot of players to step up around this really young nucleus. Because I look at, a pair of players who played a lot as true freshmen for the Cardinal last year, linebacker David Bailey and defensive end Jackson Moy. Bailey, I believe, was the, if I remember correctly, was the first true freshman to start a season opener under David Shaw.
Interesting.
11 games altogether, nine starts, 46 tackles, team high, 8.5 tackles for loss, and 2.5 sacks. Moy, I believe, is the only 300-pound defender. He was pretty busy as a true freshman as well. Only one start, but he made 22 tackles, 4.5 TFLs. They also brought in Gathan Bernadel through the transfer portal from Florida International. He was he was one of the few defenders in Conference USA last year with over 100 tackles. He had eight TFLs for the Panthers as well. So they've got a lot of potential to be at least a little bit better than the prognosis. I think they're projected dead last in the Pac-12, if memory serves. But they do have like a lot of interesting young talent. But I do think that, the problem for them is they have a lot of major questions, same as Hawaii does. And I do wonder whether or not the Warriors might be able to take advantage of a secondary that's like for as much promising talent as they have in the front seven. I don't know that you could say that about Stanford secondary. So I actually have this one as a Hawaii win.
So do I. What? Also, we should mention Lavani DeMooney, linebacker, gone as well. The leading defender from last year. So that's a big loss. I do have a Hawaii win as well. FPI has it about a 60, was it 65-35? So for, in their favor. It's at home. New coach. Weird things can happen late night in Hawaii football. And that game's going to be not the typical super late. It's going to be a. So it's 8 Pacific. What's that? 6 local kickoff. Is that right?
I believe so.
So like 11 Eastern if you're looking at the big picture stuff. So CBS Sports Network. But I do think they can get the win because Stanford's not very good at football. Simple as that. All right, Matt, what do we got for Albany for your FCS minute here?
Okay, so the Great Danes, and interesting. Like, do you realize like their actual name is actually U Albany? I believe that's like their official
I
athletics
saw
name.
that. I thought it was just for University of Albany, but on FB schedules it says U Albany.
Yeah,
So interesting.
so
It's a good
the
fact.
Great Danes, maybe a little bit unlucky or a lot unlucky, depending on your interpretation. Only 1-5 in games decided by 8 or fewer points last year. They lost five different games by a combined 18 points. And I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that a lot of their starting lineup on both sides of the ball ended up skewing pretty young altogether, which means that they might be a sneaky candidate to bounce back at the FCS level. And I think if you're looking at this roster, what you start with is the fact that they do have one of the best young quarterbacks anywhere on that level. Reese Poffenbarger started every game for them last year. He was the CAA Rookie of the Year. also the runner-up for the Jerry Rice Award, which is given annually to the FCS's top freshman. He completed 61.5% of his passes, 24 touchdowns, and 2,999 yards, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And only a 1% interception rate. So he had it all going on as a true freshman, and he has a lot of talent around him. I think, you know, the bigger question is, can Albany improve on defense in particular? Because they've got some talent on that side of the ball. Yeah, they had, I believe, a trio of all-conference defenders last year. Anton Jukaj had 12 TFLs on the from the defensive end spot. Dylan Kelly led the team with 97 total tackles. AJ Simon, also pretty productive, 10.5 TFLs and 5 sacks. But at the same time, you know, this is the defense that also gave up over 30 points a game, gave up 6.36 yards per play. And you know, for as talented as they were individually, they also had just 15 sacks as a team, which was the second lowest figure in the CAA. So I think given all of that, it wouldn't shock me if Albany ended up putting up maybe more points than Warriors fans might be comfortable with. But I do think that, you know, if the run and shoot operates like I think that it will, they should still be able to win this game pretty comfortably. So I have this one as a Hawaii win.
I do as well. So there's a couple of interesting facts about this game. It is 4,940 miles from Albany to Honolulu. Like, and it's going to be a midnight Eastern kick. So it's Eastern time zone kick, not midnight for Albany. That's a beast of a trip, man. Like, I'm curious. Actually, I'm trying to find out. I wonder what's 5,000 east. Do you think it's closer to London or closer to Honolulu for them?
Oh, no. Albany is absolutely closer to London.
It's okay. It is 3,300 miles. So they could go to, what, Germany? Paris? I don't know. Well, no, wait. They can go way east. I'm just kind of looking at the map here. So that's a heck of a trip. That's going to be a day-plus trip. They're not flying charter, I guarantee, unless it's their one game a year they do. But they're flying, like, commercial and coach. That's like a two-day trip, man.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to leave Tuesday to get to the Saturday night game, I'm guessing. I don't know. So that's something else just to consider. We're just a beast of a trip. Very late night kick for them. They might score some points because the adrenaline just the game itself. But, man, that's going to be a beast of a travel.
Mm.
But it's a victory for them playing Albany. Then they go to Oregon to play the Ducks, who it could be a potential Heisman Trophy finalist, Bo Nix quarterback there. And this will clearly one of the games I'll test that secondary, Cam Stone and others. Oregon's projected to be what, top 12 team, top 14 team. This is going to be like the Michigan game last year where it's like 51-10 or something.
Yeah. I mean, obviously Oregon is probably going to win this game in a walk. But in a game like this, I wonder where you even start talking about it because, you know, you mentioned Bo Nix and all the talent that Oregon has on offense. You know, they also bring back, I believe, their top three runners from a year ago. You know, Nix as well as Noah Whittington and Bucky Irving, both of whom combined for roughly 1,800 yards and I want to say like 6 yards a carry. And so yeah, pretty ridiculous production on the ground. And oh, by the way, they also bring back, I believe, 3 starters on the offensive line as well. And the defense should also continue to be pretty good. You know, Brandon Dorlus up front, you know, the Justin Jacobs linebacker. They brought in guys like Evan Williams through the transfer portal from Fresno State. Not much really to say here. Oregon going to be pretty good. Going to have a lot of star power. Going to win this game pretty handily.
I don't know how I can do unless they run a quick offense and get some quick cheap points because they run the ball. The unique offense they're going to be Oregon's facing, which they don't see the run and shoot very often. But they return, like you mentioned, top receiver. They do lose, like, Chase Cota. But that's about it, really, offensively. Like, Bo Nix also, just so you know, 14 rushing touchdowns, more than Irving and Whittington combined, who had 10. So it's just going to be like the Michigan game last year, Vanderbilt. It's going to be if Hawaii gets 21 points, that'll be good. I don't know if they'll get there, though. So that's the loss for me. Next game, New Mexico State. This is a revenge game. They have to beat the Lobos or the Aggies. They have to, right? And they got their butt kicked last year against them, and they're at home now. There's no way they're going to lose to this team. They just can't. I don't care if New Mexico State, we think they're maybe better. They have better players, coach, whatever you want to say. I'm going all in on Hawaii win this game because they have to win it. It's a dumb reason, but they're going to win at home.
And see, I'm not so sure because, you know, New Mexico State definitely did improve over the course of last year. You know, we talked about them a little bit on the New Mexico podcast. Of course, they went 7-6, won the Quick Lane Bowl, you know, had a definite midseason turnaround, buoyed at least a little bit by the fact that they also got to play a pair of home games against not very good FCS opponents. Mm-hmm. So, you know, take that with a grain of salt, if you will, but they have a quarterback in Diego Pavia, who's a dual threat guy, accounted, I believe, for trying to remember exactly how many touchdowns he combined, 19 touchdowns altogether, 13 through the air, 6 on the ground. You know, Star Thomas is back. They have a running back committee that, you know, was pretty productive. 21 total touchdowns between him, Jumaane Jones, Imani Watkins, and Tim Gans. The major question for this year's team, though, is how well are they going to be able to replace a lot of talent on defense? You know, because their linebacker duo, Chris Ojo, Trevor Brohard, both are in the NFL ranks now. Lazarus Williams is gone. Bryce Jackson is gone. And, you know, they did bring in a number of players through the transfer portal who could theoretically provide an infusion of talent. You know, guys like Deion Wilson, Jamari Button, you know, Denver Warren from the JUCO ranks. Yeah, and a even familiar names like Keontae Clinton came over from Wyoming. So they've got a lot of new faces on that side of the ball, but I do think that, you know, I'm not as sold on Hawaii being a lock to win this game. I actually think that New Mexico State should be able to go on the road and win this one.
Interesting. Would you like to guess what FPI says for this game?
Is it something like 60% in favor of NMSU?
No, you are beyond off on. It is 81% in favor of Hawaii.
Interesting.
81%. That's huge, Matt. That's like, I was shocked. I saw when I pulled up just now. I'm like, what? I figured it would be somewhere near range, maybe a slight edge, like somewhere in the 50% range for more leaning to Mexico State, maybe Hawaii. So I'm wondering why they say that's almost 81% chance for victory for Hawaii to win. It's at home. That's a big deal. But you are right. They have those players you mentioned. But I don't know. I just think Hawaii was embarrassed last year. And I know it's we should be more analytical and look at this. But I think that's the thing where they don't want to get beat by a team that's was good. They went to a bowl game last year, like you mentioned. I don't care if you beat two FCS teams. Mexico State hasn't been very good in a while. Outside of when they beat. Then they beat Utah State a couple years ago in the Arizona Bowl. They haven't gone to many bowls. Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, they beat Utah State in the Arizona Bowl, right?
Yeah.
So, but they've only gone to the bowl game last year, that bowl game, because there's a big deal when they're playing the Utah State Aggies, where it was like the first bowl game in, what, 50 years or something? So they're a better program. But I think Schrager's a good quarterback. I think being at home is a big deal. And it's kind of a gut feeling. I think Hawaii's going to win that one.
So what about conference play then?
Okay, conference play. Looking at their schedule, it's pretty good because they get I'm pretty sure they do this on purpose, man. I haven't looked historically, but it's pretty rare for Hawaii to have back-to-back road games anywhere just because travel-wise. I know they do occasionally. Like, they'll stay in the mainland sometimes, and they play like Reno and Fresno or Reno and San Jose or Vegas and whatever back-to-back like that. They have none of that, which is good. They get their home games are their more difficult opponents. San Diego State's at home. San Jose State's at home. Air Force is at home. They don't play Boise State. They don't play Fresno State. Their schedule's pretty manageable, and their road games are all winnable, I think. So their toughest, honestly, is their toughest conference game at Wyoming?
Yes.
Question mark? Or yeah. For,
yeah, I think so. Yeah, I would. I was thinking question mark at first, but then I remembered, like, you know, they have it's been pretty hard for them in recent years to win at Wyoming.
It's a hard trip, Laramie to Honolulu. Oof.
I'm trying to remember the last time. I'm trying to look up as we're talking the last time Hawaii won on the road at Wyoming. Actually, well, you know what? I take that back. It was only 2 years ago.
Yeah, just kidding. What's it called? I forget the trophy. The Hawaiian Cowboy Trophy.
Paniolo.
I always kind of mix up. Yeah, Paniolo Trophy. Again, college football, you're dumb and weird, and I love that trophy for the Hawaiian Cowboy to get that for that particular game. But that's
their... but before that, they had lost six in a row at in Laramie.
Yeah, it's tough. And this is a late game too. This is a late. We could potentially be seeing a snow game versus. It's a noon kickoff, so there's that to consider. But still, they're playing November 18th at Laramie. That's gonna be a tough one. But like overall, the schedule plays out pretty good, like we mentioned. So, what do you think? Well, I guess you ask me the question first of all. The first game's at UNLV. That's also for the, again, it shouldn't be the Ninth Island Trophy. It should be the Golden Pineapple Trophy, first of all. Get it right, people. I don't understand why that's, I get it, but I like the Golden Pineapple better, right? That makes more sense. Mm-hmm.
You are correct.
Thank you. I don't think they're going to win that game because it's a rival game within a conference. You shouldn't be unfamiliar, but if you listen, like, wait, is that a rival? Yeah, that's a rival. Hawaii has a couple. I just don't think they can do it because I like Doug Brumfield a lot. We like what Brendan Marion can do. You can listen to our Vegas preview we did recently about that particular game. But we both are high in Rebels a bit, so that's gonna be a tough one. I'll go through the road games. They're gonna beat New Mexico, they're gonna beat Nevada, and we mentioned Laramie and Wyoming. That defense is just too good, and so I don't think they're gonna beat Wyoming, but I think they can split on the road in conference play.
Yeah, I mean, I think you might be right. And I do think, like, in my opinion, a lot of it is just going to come down to how much progress the defense can make.
Mm-hmm.
Because I only have them going 1-3 in those road games, you know, beating Nevada, but losing at UNLV, at New Mexico, and at Wyoming. And I do think that a lot of it is going to come down to just, you know, how many stops can they make? Because, you know, if I were going to compare UNLV to Hawaii, for example, you know, I think both have a lot of potential on the offensive side of the ball, but on paper, you know, I think we saw more out of the Rebels defense last year, and they have more coming back than, you know, Hawaii does. And I think that, you know, even if the calculus isn't quite the same as it is for the Lobos, you know, having lost to like three different players in the secondary, having to, you know, replace a fair amount of the pass rush up front, you know, I think their track record has at least earned them a little bit of benefit of the doubt, and their capacity to improve on offense should change the tenor of that potential result as well.
So what about the home games then?
The most difficult slate, but it's also not terribly easy too, because if you're looking at it, like all four of the games that they're playing at home could be against potential bowl teams.
Yeah, you got San Diego State, then San Jose State, then Air Force, then CSU, who I think if we order those out, it's probably CSU is the least likely to make a bowl, but I think they're in the realm of possibility.
Mm-hmm.
But they're also games they could possibly potentially win, because San Diego State, I have it as a loss for that game, but Jalen Maiden's a good quarterback. And having a full year and all the type of stuff, actually practicing in QB, and Ryan Lindley is the OC, which we've discussed before. The running game's not there. Defense is good. That could be remember last year's low scoring game. Like all these teams, remember, they only had two games or blowouts. It was what, Fresno and San Jose, right? I think that's what it was.
Yeah, they have. And that game against San Diego State has actually been pretty close more often than not in recent years. Four of the last five games between these two teams decided by seven or fewer points.
And last year, what was it, 16-14?
Yeah.
So that, I don't think it's a win, but I think it could be a potential, because like their offense is always a question mark for San Diego State. Even if Jalen made it as good as we think he could be, running games are terrible. Offensive line hasn't been good. They graduated a lot of receivers who have moved on. So the offense is still a big question mark, despite the position position they're normally not amazing at is supposed to be good. Everything else is like, yeah, we'll see. Mm-hmm. Then they do San Jose State, another loss. This will test their secondary with Shavon Cordero throwing the ball down the field. I don't think that'll be a win, because I think Spartans have a more balanced team, I would say. And they have the better quarterback, better receivers, defense. I know there's guys to replace him, but I think overall that's going to be a difficult one for Hawaii to keep pace for scoring a lot of points. I think they could score some points, but the reason they couldn't, because Spartans defense was fine. There's nothing to, not sorry, let me rephrase that. Their secondary, they could probably pass a little bit there. But the reason they could score points are losing like Kate Hall, Fajoko, those type of players. That's where I think they could possibly take advantage. And so I think that's lost as well. Air Force, just no way, triple option. They can't handle it. It is at home. So that could be weird. And then I have them losing at home to Colorado. I have them losing all the home games, Matt. Help me out here. Why is that the case? I have them losing basically every game at home, only beating Stanford and Albany all year.
Well, and I think, you know, it's to the same point that I made a couple of minutes ago. Even if Hawaii's offense is a little bit better, there's no guarantee that the defense will keep up. And I do think that each of those four teams that you just mentioned, San Diego State, San Jose State, Air Force, and Colorado State, on paper probably figure to be a little bit better defensively.
But a little bit better at 37, what is it, 35 points a game down to 30, still not good.
Yeah.
So what do you think? Like, how do you think they'll handle those games at home?
I mean, I have them penciled down to lose all four of them as well.
When's the last time Air Force has been out there? Has it been a minute?
I believe so, yeah.
I'm going to try to look it up real quick. But what's your reason for them losing all four at home?
Like, I just think that, you know, if I'm looking at the home slate, I do think that each of those teams, even despite the questions that they have, they're just like, they just have more talent on both sides of the ball, at least at present, which is not to say that they can't sneak, you know, like you mentioned a minute ago, they almost snuck up on the Aztecs last year, you know? Yeah. So like there is the capacity, and I feel like I've said this every single week, like no one in the Mountain West is bulletproof. So it wouldn't shock me if they were able to steal a win or two at home. But I think in order to do it, they're going to have to prove that they can win a track meet. And if they're going to do that, then they're going to have to prove that they can make one or two stops here and there.
So I got the question, Air Force versus Hawaii. Air Force won in 2019, 56-26. They won in 2015, 58-7. Besides that, they've only played three times this century when they lost 52-30 in 2001, which would have been a non-conference game. So this is only the third trip since they've been in the conference to play at Hawaii this year. So not very often, but Air Force won 14-7 overall with one tie. So it's kind of, I guess that's what, 4 years ago by now, but it's not very often they play out there just because of divisions and stuff. So what's your overall record? I have 5-8, them winning two non-conference games and then going 3-3 in conference play. Or excuse me, forgot the fifth game, New Mexico State. So 3-2 in non-conference play, 2-6 in conference play. Both road victories against New Mexico and Nevada.
So I have them with more or less the same record as last year. I have them going 3-10 overall, 1-7 in conference play. I don't know if that's necessarily a bad thing, though. Considering the hole from which they started, it would not surprise me if the overall product from week to week is better. And it doesn't necessarily reflect it in the win-loss standings. But at the same time, you know, there are plenty of winnable games on the schedule. Like maybe New Mexico State does take a step back. They can steal that one at home. You know, maybe San Diego State is still a little bit erratic on offense. You know, Hawaii could steal a defensive-minded game if it comes into that kind of slugfest. They almost did it last year. You know, if New Mexico, you know, stumbles, like maybe their offense doesn't quite get off the ground the way that I think that it might, they could win that one on the road. You know, if Wyoming's offense is dysfunctional, they could win that one on the road. They did it 2 years ago. So there's a plenty of opportunity for them to make waves in this conference. I think I'm hedging a little bit, mostly because I don't know how well they're going to address the number of questions that they have on defense in particular. But it wouldn't shock me if the offense is prolific enough for them to win, you know, a couple of 30 or 40 point shootouts that nobody would expect them to.
Yeah, I also think last year to consider, like, the reason I'm going a few more wins is because look what they did. Like, there, how many one possession games last year did they lose? I think that luck's got to change a little bit. And so 5-8, like, I agree with, like, could, like, thinking the other way, could they lose to Stanford? Yeah. Could they lose to Mexico State? Yeah. But also, I could see them beating UNLV. I could see them beating Colorado State. I don't have a ton of swing games, but there's a couple opportunities to. I think a bowl game would be like the best case scenario, because they, remember, they need 7 wins since they play 13 games. But I do see a couple of swing games in there, like San Diego State, probably not, but. If the offense doesn't do, is it just Jalen Maiden and nothing else? Like, They played them to the 2 point, like you mentioned, the 4 or 5 been super close. Last year was a 2-1 position game, 2 points game. And like I mentioned, field goal kickers, if they have experience kicking, that could make a difference in some of these games. San Jose State, like I said, could be a win. Air Force, probably not, but just because that's so different, unique styles. But why can't they beat CSU and those San Jose State and UNLV? So there is a potential. If things go extremely well, maybe 8 wins, like best case scenario. But I just don't think a bowl game's in the works. But I do think they'll get a little bit of a bounce back last year, a little bit be more lucky, which is not really a thing you can actually tangibly measure when you're losing by a couple points here or there. But it goes to the small things like the defense being more experienced this year from the year before. We have a little bit of new offense. We have a running game, which, yes, losing to one of their best players, but the guy who's extremely efficient, over 7.5 yards per carry last year. They're bringing transfers on the defensive front, transfer wide receivers to help fill that volume and depth. There is room for improvement. I think there'll be a couple more wins than last year, but they're still going to be struggling a lot. But I just think if the defense can be, dude, give me even a touchdown better, and they'll be in so many more games. If they give up just 28 points a game, that's a drastic improvement, and that could lead to a couple more wins. So that's where I'm leaning for them, that they will improve under year two of Timmy Chang, and they'll get a couple wins with it too.
I think they have a clear direction,
which is important, very important.
Which is important. And they have a very strong culture that Timmy Chang and his coaching staff has cultivated over the last couple of years. You know, the Brotherhood, the hashtag. You know, I think it's sort of emblematic of the investment that this program wants to make within the state. And so, you know, even if it takes a little bit of while, even if it takes a little while to really bear fruit, I have to think that they're going to give Chang and company the amount of time that they need to be able to sort of, you know, make, you know, to get back into that competitive window and open it up again. But in the meantime, you know, I do fully expect that Hawaii is going to be exactly the kind of team that nobody's going to look forward to facing in 2023. And I, personally, as a Fresno State alum, I'm glad that Fresno State doesn't have to face them this year.
Yeah. Anything else to add? Then we're just going to wrap it up here with the Hawaii preview for the 2023 season.
I think we're pretty much all set.
All right, we'll wrap up here. Check us out, MWR.com. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening to this. Say, hey, we want more of this. Submit it to my feed. Bring it along. We got a couple more previews left, Matt. Season's here in a couple weeks, and it's going to be amazing. And yeah, just check us out at MWR.com, and we'll see you next time, folks.